Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Oh, baby, the season is underway. Major League Baseball is back, Brandon Bollinger. It is back, and so is Deferred Collusion. It's me, Jesse Rowe, joined as always by the father of Zenaida. I was about to call you the king of the South Bay again. I didn't do it, except I just did it. But either way, Dodger baseball is back. The Dodgers sweep a two-game series in Tokyo against the Chicago Cubs. And Brandon, it's nice to have the world's greatest game back. How are you, buddy?
Jesse Rowe. Oh, my God. Everybody, Deferred Collusion, we're back. Your boy Brandon, the one and only. Jesse, the king of Crespi Rowe.
Right.
Jess, we're fucking back, dude. Sorry for cursing so early, but we're back. Baseball season, it's in the air. Yeah, I know. Now we got to wait a couple weeks for opening day back in the States. But what a tasty appetizer we just had. A little two-game exhibition for the Cubs and the Dodgers against the Yomiuri Giants, I believe, and the Hanshin Tigers. And then to kick off the regular season, obviously, two games that the Dodgers would win. But, dude, the pageantry, that first pitch in game one, the countdown, the freaking lights go out, spotlights hit after a dramatic pause on the mound. There's a young kid out there. He's got a freaking Pokeball. I mean, if it's just not oozing nostalgia, I don't know what it is. But, it was just captivating. The pageantry of all the players getting announced. I mean, dude, the TV numbers backed it up. 25 million viewers, I believe, for game one in Japan. It's the most viewed baseball game of all time in Japan, I believe.
It's crazy.
Dude, absolutely.
Dodgers are bad for baseball, dude. They're just only getting the best, the highest viewed baseball game in the history of one of the biggest baseball countries in the world on opening day.
Absolutely. Insane.
No, it was special. It was a special, special week there. A few games, even just the games in that didn't mean anything. You know, those were fun.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about those a little bit because the Dodgers actually they lost two games to the Tigers, I believe.
They got shut out. And so did the Cubs, which is fun because a certain NL West rival owner was talking about how they can't compete with the Dodgers, but.
Oh, the Colorado Rockies owner? Was that who it was?
Oh, yes, that would be him. He had a funny little quip about not being able to compete with the Dodgers. And, nobody told you to sign Chris Bryant. You know what I mean? Yeah. Nobody told you to trade Nolan Arenado for nothing.
Meanwhile, one of the Japanese league teams just shut out the Dodgers and the Cubs in four games.
Is that bad, dude? I don't know. I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know. But, tough time to be a cute little Rocky.
Yeah.
But, hey, great stadium. Love the food. Shouts out Blue Moon. Delicious.
It's actually, you know what? We should actually take, we should take a little deferred collusion road trip to Coors Field one time, because I've never been. I would love to go there. But,
and you know what, Jesse? You know what all of our friends watching should do? You should remember to like and subscribe this episode. Subscribe to our channel. We are getting geared up to try and kick out a little more content for this regular season right around the corner.
Yeah, by the way, we're 10 days away from the one-year anniversary of episode number one of Deferred Collusion. Whoa, so
that's cool.
I know that a lot of the newer subscribers have come along in the past couple of months, but if you've been here the whole way, if you've been a ride or die, thank you guys so much. Before we get into the series, we sort of break it down a little bit. One quick note. Today is the birthday of the greatest pitcher of all time. It's Clayton Kershaw's birthday. Happy birthday, Clayton Kershaw.
Happy birthday, Kersh.
One more revolution around the sun. You made it, buddy. Good job.
That's my goat. That's your goat. That's all of our goats. The greatest lefty in the game. Stand-up guy. Just a class act all around.
Well, Tarik Skubal's the greatest lefty in the game. Just but you know what I'm
currently, not
the history of the game. Yeah.
But my point is, well, speaking of Tarik Skubal, I don't know if you saw this on Pitching Ninja, but he was out there interviewing at the Tokyo series, and he talked to our birthday boy, Clayton Kershaw, and actually was discussing his legendary slider grip on behalf of no one else but Tarik Skubal. Hey, look at that. Yeah. Ties all together. Yeah, dude, it's pretty cool seeing Kersh just open and free. Just, hey, yeah, dude, this is how I grip it. This is how I throw it. Horseshoe, blah, blah, blah. And then I know you saw the clip, but Pitching Ninja, at the very end of it, edits in Tarik Skubal then showing his changeup, which Kershaw was like, yeah, if I could have his grip, I'll give you my slider. So it was cool to see this little generational crossover. And Jess, I was telling you, it gets me excited for just like a new generation of young pitchers coming up, you know, whether you're in little league or college, you know, trying to make it into the bigs. But if you're a AAA, whatever, but there's just so much information now, Jess, just at the ready from your StatCast guys to your just old school hurlers like our Kersh, you know? It's cool to see evolution of pitching.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about valuable it is for guys like Skubal, who's part of the spin rate generation, you know, versus Kershaw, who's not, like the amount of value that you can get from a guy like Kershaw, who, you know, made his money with one of the greatest pitching adjustments of all time, learning how to throw a cut slider essentially off of, because he needed something to pair his fastball and his curveball with. He needed something in between, and that's where the slider came in. It's probably the most effective arsenal change in the history of professional pitching, if you really want to think of it in those terms, because he became a completely different pitcher when he did that. And I think Skubal's on his way, but I just think that guys like Skubal can learn so much from those guys that learned how to do it without all of the advanced metrics, without all of those special cameras that measure spin rate. Getting that sort of information is going to be invaluable. But regardless of that, happy birthday, Kersh. And, we did have a couple of games here that we should break down, because
boy,
Brandon. I know it's only two games. 162-0 is very much on the table here, because the Dodgers looked absurd in these two games. And I mean, it's not like they ripped the cover off the ball. They didn't have Freddie, they didn't have Mookie, but they put together relentless at bats all series, and they pitched the lights out. They look incredible. I think the story is the bullpen, because I think we knew the starting pitching was going to be good, but the bullpen looked ridiculous. Tanner Scott looked awesome. Anthony Banda looked fucking nasty. Vesia looked great. Just everybody looks good. And Kirby Yates looked great. It's just
the young guys. Landon Knack went out through two shutout innings with three Ks. And then they got a young blood in there. Number 86, everyone's favorite, Jack Dreyer. He threw an inning, did give up an earned run, but got a K, gave up a couple hits. But hey, welcome to the show, kid. You know, you're in Japan.
Yeah, I mean,
how fucking cool, you know?
Couldn't have started any better. So let's. By the way, I didn't realize Ryan Brazier was actually back with the Dodgers. I thought the Dodgers DFA'd him. Not back with the Dodgers. I'm sorry. I didn't know that he went to the Cubs because the Dodgers DFA'd him. And then I saw that he went in and he actually pitched the ninth inning for the Cubs the other night. So I didn't even realize the Cubs picked him up. I hope Brazier, your champion. I hope you have a good year with the Cubs. But
he will, dude. He's good. He's good, dude.
I want to say we should start with game one here because we can break down game two. Let's start with game one because dude. Obviously, we already knew this, but I thought Yamamoto just looked awesome.
Yeah, dude.
I thought he looked really, really just totally on top of his arsenal. There was a sequence that I really want to talk about where he was pitching to Michael Bush and Kyle Tucker back to back. And I'm pretty sure he threw like six straight splitters to Michael Bush, which is such an effective weapon against lefties. And I'm pretty sure he threw like 80% splitters to both of those guys throughout the game. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. I apologize if I have those numbers wrong. But he was totally in control of that pitch. And he only had four strikeouts in five innings. And he did give up some hard contact off the fastball. But other than that, I thought that he just looked like he just picked up where he left off. And he looks like he's kind of the forgotten man of this rotation a little bit. But he might be the best pitcher we have. You know,
yeah, he's pretty nasty, and I think it's easy to kind of lose him right in the mix. And I know, I know that even kind of sounds funny, right? Talking about Yamamoto and like kind of like the mix of this whole pitching staff, but like I started looking at the bottom of the box score, and I like forgot Yamamoto was the starting pitcher of Game One, which is so silly, right? I'm thinking about Roki. I'm thinking about what I'm really thinking about is the 8 and 9 inning pitchers. Blake Treinen coming out, looking disgusting, picking up right where he left off last offseason. And then Tanner frickin' Scott, right? Like, we're talking, like I just said, I'm thinking about Roki. I'm thinking Shohei. I'm thinking, oh, man, Freddie's out. Mookie's out. And we just got a couple of casual killers coming out of the pen for the 8th and 9th. And it's like, oh, this is going to be the game plan all year. Like, get out to an early lead and, I don't know, get, what, 5-6 innings out of your starter maybe? And then hand it over to your pen. Like, who do you want to take over in the 7th, you know? Do you want to go 7-8-9? I'll lay it out for you real quick. Kirby Yates, Blake Treinen, freaking Tanner Scott. I haven't even mentioned Vesia. I haven't mentioned Banda. I haven't mentioned...
Ben Kasparis?
I mean, Evan Phillips. I mean... Garrett Crochet, or Garrett Crochet, sorry.
I wish we had Garrett Kopech.
Sorry, you know, those old White Sox, dude, those kids with beards. They could be cousins. But Kopech's on the IL, you know, Bruzdar. I mean, Jess, this is a murderer's row of a bullpen. And it's like, yeah, I know it's easy for us to lock in on the offense, and we'll get into that a little bit more. And, like, even the rotation, right? Guys that didn't pitch, starters, right? Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow. Like, this is fucking insane, dude.
Yeah,
this
I mean, the offense really wasn't even the story that much from this series. Because, I mean, they were struggling a little bit against Imanaga, who did have some control. I think he had four walks because the Dodgers were really working the count well. Muncy played a big part of that. I think Muncy had, like, three at-bats with, like, 24 pitches faced.
Wow.
So he, like, against I don't know if it was against Showa. Yeah, he had three. So he was 0 for 3 with two walks, but in three of his at-bats, he faced, like, 24 pitches or something. So he was just relentlessly working the count. And so the offense wasn't really productive in this game. But, you know, they obviously did enough. But it's really just this team's ability to prevent runs. And I think that they don't necessarily have, like, the nastiest guys in all of baseball. Mm. But what I think that they have is they have a roster constructed in a way that's sort of designed to match up with specific types of offenses at specific moments. And like this happened a lot last year in the playoffs. You didn't see Kopech facing Rizzo more than once, like in like a three game span. It's like in the next game or even like Anthony Volpe. He would come in, he would face those guys, and then the next night they'd put in a different right-hander in a similar situation. And yeah. I think that they would just – they were scattering appearances throughout the lineup so that, like, batters had to face you at different times under different circumstances so that you just – you wouldn't get used to it. And yeah. I think that's what the Dodgers are sort of – they're cracking the code on it a little bit. And I think we saw it a lot in this series, how they scattered their bullpen very effectively.
I couldn't agree more. And what I'm really loving about this pen right now, health permitting, but I think there's a good mix of guys that have power – and then there's guys that have stuff. But what everybody has is like a slightly different like mix of arm angles and slot and kind of where they're coming at you. You know, like Trinan, for example, he's going to throw 97 at you, but he's going to throw something that's going to run arm side. It's going to run freaking in. Like, you know, if you're a right-handed batter, it's going to go fucking like bend in at you, bend out at you. And then you got a guy like Tanner Scott who's also going to hit 97, but it's coming at a whole different way. It's cutting a whole different way, breaking a whole different way. And it's just fascinating, right? Even like some of the fireballers, right? Like a guy like Brusdar versus Kopech, they're coming at you a different way. And then you got Vesia, who's throwing like 95. It's right down the middle sometimes, but you know, it's harder than hell to hit. And it's like, he's disguising the ball well. There's a lot of break on his fastball. And I don't know. It's just a bunch of different guys with really well, formulated game plans. And when they're clicking as a unit, you know, we saw what they did in the playoffs. And it's formidable. And kudos to the Dodgers front office.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Fist. For seeing an opportunity with Tanner Scott still unsigned and going after him and getting him, you know? Same thing with Kirby Yates, right? He was just sitting around. What did we sign him for? 13 mil, I think, the Dodgers signed him for? I mean,
yeah.
You know, the Colorado Rockies owner can talk about the Dodgers ruining baseball all he wants. But you had plenty of money for cap space. You could have got a guy like that. Pitching is always in short supply. And I mean, I'm sure you've seen it all over baseball social media, whether it's, you know, baseball Twitter, IG, TikTok. Alex Verdugo's still unsigned. He's an above league average bat, right? Slightly. I would put him at about league average. Sure, no pop, about as much pop as a wet fucking paper bag. But the guy's a plus defender. You know, the guy's got speed and he's under 30. So it's just crazy. You know, we've complained a lot about the way ownership has seemingly colluded to kind of keep some players' salaries down, offering guys contracts all at once, short windows to respond before pivoting off, and then the phone not ringing anymore at all. So it seems like there's this middle class of pro that's just kind of being pushed out of baseball. And it's shitty, and we hope you find a home soon, Doogie. I think you still got a lot of good ball ahead of you.
Yeah. So you said a lot there, but I do want to go back because you did mention Trinan. So while you've been talking, I've been on a little I've been doing a little deep dive because I noticed in the preseason he was getting roughed up a little bit. He was actually getting kind of shelled in a lot of the Cactus League games. And but he looked super nasty in Japan, and I was looking at I was really monitoring his velocity. It looks like he was between like high 96 to like low 98. So he actually was he had some good velo under him, which was good to see. Because I was a little worried about you know, the type of workload he had at the end of last season. Obviously, he had that incredible 48 pitch, two and a third inning performance in game five, whatever it was. You worry about a guy his age who has had some arm issues, like taking on that kind of a load. He looked really good.
Whoa, so
that was really important to see.
My guy's taking on a load, dude.
I mean, dude, if anybody can take a load, I don't even know what that means. I'm just
anyway, baseball.
Pretty much it was funny because the Dodgers didn't score any runs, and then the second Imanaga left the game, Dodgers got three. And I think partly in part to John Birdie making a little error on the field, if I'm not mistaken.
For him.
John Birdie.
Imanaga, just before we hit John Birdie, but just to touch on Imanaga, he did throw four innings. Uncharacteristically at four walks. I believe that's as many walks as he had through
Of his career.
April. Yeah, I think that was the most he had through all of like the first month of the season last year.
Well, he was absurd last year. Remember his start was like insane.
But he did throw 69 pitches over four innings. So, you know, pitch count was up there. But yeah, Jess, that led to this little costly error you were mentioning about former Yankee John Birdie. Jess, what were you saying he had a little issue with this offseason?
Yeah, so John Birdie made a comment. So it's just funny because he was on foul territory. He makes a comment about how the Dodgers were talking about that he's never seen a World Series champion disrespect the losing team more than the Dodgers did, and that the Dodgers were speaking about the Yankees as if they didn't even belong there. And remember, the Dodgers weren't saying they didn't belong there, but however, Joe Kelly did say that they were like the eighth or ninth best team in the league. That was the only person who said anything like that. Everybody else was pretty much like just saying, like Chris Taylor said that they shit down their own leg, I believe was a quote Chris Taylor had. All that they were saying was that they play bad defense. That's really all that they said. And then John Birdie, who's saying, oh, I've never heard anybody be this disrespectful, kind of a little bit of a just chef's kiss irony for him to make an error in his first game of the season that leads to the loss. I just thought it was worth mentioning that that was very the irony was palpable on that one, Brandon.
Dude, you took it right out of my mouth like a little See's candy just melting, dude. You took it right out. It is funny though. Little side note, just it's super funny if you watch that clip back of Chris Taylor talking about them shitting down their own leg and how much I think he looks like fucking Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. He's just got that kind of look like, yeah, they just kind of shit down their own leg, and it's just like, you can just see him kind of like doing this in his own head, like,
This might be the first time Chris Taylor's ever been compared to that scene of Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, but I will say,
I mean, I'm just saying the intensity and the kind of psycho killer.
He does have some like space behind his eyes a little bit when he talks. Like, do you think he might have some like tism going on? Like, he might be a little,
he might be a little Zach Greinke on it.
No? Yeah. Maybe. He might be a little out there.
He might be a little granked. He might be a little granked. Yeah, but there is like a part of me that like when I look into Chris Taylor's eyes when he's being interviewed sometimes, I'm like, are you just in a place where you are just like torturing someone? Like, I don't know, dude. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy. I'm just saying he's got that killer look to him.
He's got like the hottest girl on the team, bro. Like, I think he's got like the prettiest girl out of all of them. Like, I think he's doing just fine at home, bro.
Course he does. Yeah. He's a stud. He's gorgeous. Yeah. Two-time champ. He deserves everything he's got.
Yeah, all but you I'm think saying, he's got like bodies locked up in his basement.
Yes, what I'm saying is that a great white shark has got some horrifying eyes, but it's a beautiful animal. You know what I mean? We're getting just stuck on this one little thing. And that's what I'm saying.
That's true.
Chris Taylor has got Patrick Bateman like eyes.
He looks like a shark, but he doesn't actually eat people like everybody thinks he does, kind of deal. Like, it's kind of how Steven Spielberg made everybody scared of sharks. Like, Jaws ruined sharks for everybody. You know,
I'll say this. I think that Chris Taylor is a well-fed shark, right? He's not hungry. He's not hurting nobody. But I'm just saying, I can see behind those eyes, dude. I can see.
Wow.
I can see
Chris,
him.
I hope Chris Taylor never sees this episode.
You know what's funny is I think he might live like not too far, like in the like South Bay area.
Oh, he's a South Bay guy for sure.
If he ever sees this, I'm sorry. I don't mean it as an insult. I mean it's a compliment to your ability to stay in the moment and hit some of the biggest bing bongs in Dodgers history. We love
the empty death stare, Patrick Bateman eyes that you have was a compliment. His name is Brandon Bollinger, by the way.
Dude, hold on, Brandon real quick Bollinger. to my point. Hold on, Chris Taylor has hit like a crazy amount of grand slams, I think.
There was one year where he had a bunch of them.
He has 6 grand slams, dude. That's crazy.
It is.
How does that rank all time, dude? Grand slam leaders. Oh, well, shit. A-Rod has got 25 grand slams, dude.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Chris Taylor is the utility guy, though. Like, A-Rod was an everyday, you know, superstar. For Chris Taylor to have 6, I still think is pretty good for a guy like him. Yeah.
Well, dude, you know who else has 6 grand slams? I'll just name a few guys off, just middle of the list. Chipper Jones, Matt Holliday, Lourdes Gurriel, Agon, oddly enough, Scooter Jeanette. Dude, wow. CJ Cron with 6 grand slams.
Hey, good for you, man.
But Cespedes, Jose Canseco, Roy Campanella, Miggy Cabrera, all members of the 6 grand slam club, as well as old Patrick Bateman eyes Chris Taylor.
By the way, the great thing about us talking about all of these grand slams Chris Taylor hit is that he didn't even play in this series. So we're just talking about Chris Taylor. He hasn't even fucking played it. Hadn't at bat yet this season.
Dude, I don't think he got a hit all of spring training either.
No. I still
love you, CT3. Yeah.
Let's move on to game 2, though, because the Dodgers' bats got going a little bit. By the way, Mookie and Freddie didn't even play in this series. Mookie was sick. He lost like 15 pounds or something. Battling some sort of stomach bug. And Freddie, what was he dealing with?
He had a rib contusion or some rib discomfort. He said that it was
back problems from carrying us all of the World Series.
Yeah, no, he actually did say that it was some of that similar pain from the World Series.
Well,
that he's about 75%, but he'll be ready for opening day. So all's well that ends well. I saw him jumping up on a couple of hits. I think that Shohei double, I think, got Freddie jumping up in game 1. But let's hit those stats, Jess. Give me that box score, Papa.
Well, the Dodgers they didn't have any homers in game 1, but the power bats came out in game 2. They hit 4 home runs. They had home runs by Tommy Edman, Kike Hernandez, Shohei Ohtani. I'm sorry, I thought Muncy homered. He did not. They had 3 home runs. So it was did Muncy homer? No. Okay, it was 3 homers. It was Edman, Hernandez, and Shohei. And we're going to get to the Shohei home run because that was kind of the moment of this game. But fucking Kike hit a goddamn moonshot, Brandon.
Dude, did he ever? Yeah, My goodness gracious, dude. Talk about putting a little island flair onto that ball, dude.
Yeah.
He blasted it, and it just seems like whenever the moment is a little bit elevated, that guy delivers, dude. It's pretty ridiculous. I don't know. He's got to have some insane numbers during the playoffs, but like, yeah, it just felt like another playoff game and like another moment for him to show out.
Agreed. You know what the real story is though about the offense for both of these games? They have 15 walks in 2 games.
Whoa.
They had 8 in game 1, and then they had 7 in this game. Everybody contributed in some fashion except for Teo. Teoscar went 0-for-4 in game 2, and he did produce a little bit in game 1, but so everybody really chipped in with something. They just relentlessly work counts, just exactly what they did last year, especially against the Mets when they had they broke the record for walks in a playoff series, I think it was. And pretty awesome. We'll get to the Shohei home run, but let's talk a little bit about Roki, because Roki made his major league debut, and he looked great. He was hitting like 100 miles an hour early on in the game, but boy was he nervous and jacked up on adrenaline, because he could not find the strike zone. Dude was throwing it everywhere. And he had five walks. And the funniest part about this, apparently Austin Barnes was laughing in his warm-up because of how wild Roki was during his bullpen session before the game. Apparently it was just so wild he'd never seen anything like it.
I mean, dude, the kid was juiced. You couldn't blame him, right? I mean, 23 years old, you make this big move, you go to a foreign country, you're on the biggest team in the world right now with the biggest superstar in the world, and you're going with your, you know, Team Japan teammate, championship teammate, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. You see him come out and ball out in game one. And we forgot to mention also in game one, Max Muncy became the first or the fourth player to have a hit in five countries, I believe.
Yeah.
Now the U.S., Canada, Mexico, when they played in Monterey, and South Korea last year. Now Japan. So shouts out Muncy, dude. You can always do it.
Yeah.
We love you.
No. Hey, and you know, to your point about Sasaki, it's like I would argue that this moment might be like bigger than pitching in the World Series in some regard, just because of this is – you know, we've made the comparison to like the Japanese Beatles of baseball, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the crowd was so pro Dodgers, even though these were actually, I believe these were Cubs home games in Japan, which you wouldn't know by looking in the stands because it was primarily a Dodger crowd. And it was so electric. Everybody was so behind Shohei, Yamamoto, and Sasaki. And this was clearly, this was Sasaki's big first, like true world stage moment in front of his home crowd. You could sort of understand where the nerves come from. I'd venture to guess he'd be less nervous starting game one of the World Series than he would be pitching this game, just because of how important it was. This just ushering this new era of like a baseball, the best baseball team in the world is being anchored by the three best Japanese players in the world. It was a pretty important moment for them, and I think that's probably where the nerves came from.
Jesse, I can guarantee you that if they ever make a baseball film about this Dodgers team, and this moment is in that film, no doubt, when the actor portraying Roki Sasaki is on the mound, I guarantee you they will be paying Dashboard Confessionals vindicated. I am selfish. Wow. I am wrong. I am right. I swear I'm right.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
I swear I knew it all along because Roki was flawed, but he was cleaning up so well and, you know, got into a couple jams, got some back-to-back strikeouts with bases loaded after walking him and walking a run in, you know, got himself out of it. So you can see the professionalism in him, even though if the nerves were getting to him a little bit. But hey,
this is
welcome to the show, kid. That was awesome.
Kind of incredible. 56 pitches, he only threw 25 strikes.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And but you know, still got three strikeouts, but did have five walks. But I just, you know, he wasn't good. He was going to be on a short leash anyway, but just I don't imagine that's going to be a big issue. I do think though, I've been just like looking into him a little bit more. He's got to figure out another pitch that's darting away from lefties, because it's hard to pair a curveball with your splitter when your splitter is breaking glove side in on lefties. It's such a unique pitch. Like normally splitters don't do that, right? His is more like a forkball, like a no-mo forkball, but it breaks down and in on lefties because it has a knuckle effect that almost puts it in. And I think he's going to need to figure out like a changeup of some kind that goes the other way, because I could just see that being an issue where he becomes too predictable. That's just my one little note on Roki.
I could
so
see
far.
That, but yeah. I'm more excited to see him pitch in Dodger Stadium for the first time, man. That is going to be electric. But dude, aside from that, Luis Garcia, pitched well. Like we said, Jack Dreyer, Landon Knack, Kirby Yates, and Alex Vesia all appeared.
Luis Garcia is the he gave up three base runners and a run. He was actually kind of bad. Sorry, not to enter.
Yeah. We gotta get that that angel stank off him a little bit. You know what I mean? Had to get it knocked off him a little bit. But Tommy Tanks doing his thing, first homer of the year. Kike with the bomb, that Shohei bomb. I mean, dude.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
The crack of that bat, brother, and that crowd blowing up. I mean, it tells you all you need to know about the state of baseball on the global like level. It is booming, brother.
That was, I would say, one of the most electric home runs, regular season home runs you will ever see, with Shohei hitting that home run. How important that was, how badly they waited for that moment. And there was some controversy. I've seen some controversy online, people saying that it didn't clear the yellow line because a fan reached over to grab it. You and I talked a little bit about it. We think that it was probably clearing that line, right?
I think so. I think the angle on it seemed well over. But you know, whatever. What's life without a little controversy, dude? That's the deferred collusion aspect of it. Big baseball pushing Shohei and the Dodgers on us again. It's sick, dude. It makes me want to puke.
And if you want to know why that was so important, just look at this perspective from a young fan, a 10-year-old boy who ended up getting the ball because when the ball bounced back into play, originally it looked like it might have been a double, and then they realized it was a homer. Pete Crow Armstrong threw the ball back in and threw it into the crowd, and a young boy named Sota Fujimori caught the ball. He is the luckiest 10-year-old in Japan right now because he just got Shohei's first home run in the Tokyo Dome as a member of the Dodgers. So I'm guessing that ball will be worth something. You know, it's not a 50-50 ball, but it will be worth something. He thought he actually missed out at first because he was one of the people reaching out for it, fell into field of play, and then ended up getting the ball back. Just awesome. That's one of those things that, like, it's almost like winning the lottery, right? Like, what are the odds? It feels like you win a lottery a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you know, the kid that caught Freddie's grand slam, this kid catching the home run. It's just, it reminds you of, like, how special baseball can be, especially when you're a kid, how big these guys are, how big the field is, how loud the home runs are, right? It's all a little bit more grandiose when you're a youngin', so... The fact that it's a 10-year-old makes it a little bit more fun, for me at least. Just, I think it's rad. And I don't know. I haven't really heard much negativity about this freaking exhibition, but it seems like a fucking one of the best decisions I've seen the MLB make in a long time. And I'm just really jealous I didn't get to be there. I mean,
I know. Yeah. I wanted to. Tickets were absurd. One note about the kid, he plays outfield and he's in the fourth grade. He was wearing a Dodger jersey. He says he's going to keep the ball, by the way. They will not be selling the ball. But yeah, no, I mean, dude, going to Japan, look, I'll be honest. I don't want to do it again next year because for the past two straight years, we've had opening day at 3 a.m. once in Korea and then now in Japan. Mm-hmm. I hope the Dodgers don't have to do it, but my guess is they are kind of the only team that's worth sending to Japan if they're going to do it. So
yeah,
my guess is they would do it. But if you want to, we talked a little bit about it. I mean, the viewership record was shattered in Japan, 25 million viewers for opening day. Ooh. And that's what it averaged, which is the most since last year's opening day for the Seoul series, which was 18.7 million. So, I mean, just goes to show how important this Dodgers team is to in terms of having like a global impact. And, you know, when you start using phrases like Dodgers are ruining baseball, you have to start thinking about the bigger picture here and what this actually means for the league and the longevity of the league. Like, if the league is going to be able to sustain as currently constructed, paying out these contracts and this absurd, like, wealth disparity in the sport right now, well, this is how it's going to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. So. You know, it's tough, right? Like there is a disparity in ability, I guess, right? To pay players, or at least it appears to be.
No, but perceived wealth disparity, I should have
there
said.
There we go. Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a perceived wealth disparity. And, you know, yeah, I guess not everybody can spend $1 billion over a couple of off seasons, but don't forget, these are billion-dollar franchises that, like, you got to invest in if you're going to make more money. But like we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast, there are a lot of fat, happy cats that are just happy making $100 million a season, not really investing in the fan experience, not really investing into their club, and treating players like commodities instead of human beings. So,
yeah. And it's also they use the Dodgers payroll as an excuse to, like, because they can't spend $300 million a year, that means that they're not even willing to spend like $150 million a year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's yeah. that means they shouldn't even try at all, kind of excuse. You know, whatever. I think we kind of covered it here. In game two, we also had another good performance by the bullpen. Like, Kirby Yates made his debut. Vesia looked great. I think overall, couldn't have gotten any better, right?
That's how I feel. I mean, not if you're a Cubs fan. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, that kind of sucks for them. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as a Dodger fan, I guess I would have liked to see, like, JT get to start for the Cubs one of those games. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, there was a pretty cool fan moment with Justin Taylor, just, you know, proving he's about the best guy in baseball again, with a couple of young Japanese fans with their dad, got the Cubs hats on, the
yeah,
big
cool.
red dream beard going, and JT calls him out, brings him out onto the field, picks him up, gives him signed balls, and I'm just like, this is why we're out here. Like, these kids are never going to forget it. They just made lifelong Cubs fans, you know, in a sea of Dodger fans. And it's just like why the game, I think, is so great. And like,
yeah,
you know, it's a great showcase. But
I think yeah, you still have Chris Taylor on the mind and the American Psycho reference, because you just called him Justin Taylor.
Whoa, dude, yeah. I'm losing my marbles. No, what dude. Is happening? Sorry, JT. But yeah, no, there's a lot of ball to be played, right? Nobody's guaranteed a championship, but I think the Dodgers have some super silly, like, percentage to win the World Series this year at, like, 23-point-something%.
Well, they have a 100% chance to make the playoffs.
Which is sick. That's super
yeah.
cool.
That's, yeah, that's good. We shouldn't even watch the regular season, Brandon. We're just, we're in.
We don't need to.
We're in.
We don't need to. But, like, my point is, it's like, they've won one, right, championship that I guess the league, all fans can't ignore now, you know, after the 2020 Mickey Mouse bullshit. And now they're ruining baseball. It's just silly. The game's never been hotter in the streets. And it's because it's anchored by a, you know, juggernaut franchise. So love it or hate it, it's good for it. It's good for us all. So
yep.
Suck it up, you losers, and enjoy the show, dude. Enjoy it. You got to enjoy it, Jess.
I couldn't agree more. I enjoyed it. I apologize to I guess I'm not a true fan because I couldn't wake up at 3 a.m. and watch the games. I watched the highlights.
I was up, but only because I had to be up for work. So
I recorded them, not the highlights. I recorded the game.
Yeah, I listened on the radio, but I did watch the highlights. So I am a middle-class fraud in that regard.
Yeah.
Speaking of perceived wealth disparities, Jess, do you see what the Savannah Bananas did? You ever heard of them? They're not a major league team, but they are a baseball team. Have you ever heard of them?
I have heard of them. I heard that they had a little bit of a nice little attendance at their most recent game.
So they sold out the Raymond James Arena, which is home of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 65,000 tickets to see this team. That's not, you know, anywhere near Savannah, but selling out tickets. So, Jess, my point is, it's like, hey, if you put out a fun product, if you put out, you know, something people want to see, if you maybe take pride in what you do, even if it is a little bit goofy and silly, people will give you their hard-earned dollars to come see it. And what made me, like, really laugh about this, Jess, is, you know, one of the big reasons why people are like, Fisher was right to move the damn A's out of Oakland, their attendance was trash. It's like, dude, this guy hasn't put anything into his team in 20 years. Only thing he's tried to do is get him out of this city. And now we got some interesting ticket prices, Jess, now that they're out of Oakland. Jess, list per what's his name? Bob Nightingale released a list of the top five teams for ticket prices, median ticket prices for the 2025 MLB season. Jess, do you want to guess who was number five, dude?
Well, I have the list right here if you want me to
I forgot you said it, dude. I wanted to make a guess, dude.
Sorry, I'm staring right at it. But let's just say, like, all of these, there are two of these that are very surprising on this list in terms of the top five ticket prices, median ticket prices for the upcoming season. Two of these are surprising. Three of the others are not surprising at all. But do you want to just go ahead and list them off? Because
I just killed a gnat and I'm super fast. But Jesse,
wow, dude,
number five, what coming did that gnat in ever at $132 are your Boston Red Sox. Hey, it's expensive to go see your boy Walker. I get it. You got Bregman out there. Number four, Houston Astros at $133. But here's where we start showing up in fucking Shelbyville, right? This is just weird. The Tampa Bay Rays playing in the New York Yankees AAA stadium will command $146 per ticket this year. That's, like I said, that's best for third highest in the league. No surprise, this is $177. The Los Angeles Dodgers, I mean, you gotta pay off that 700 milli to Shohei, right?
Yeah.
But number one is where we get into asinine territory, and that is at $181 for your John Fisher's Athletics. I think the Sacramento Stadium has a capacity of 14,000, so you're just going to juice it out as much as you can to try and make some money, I guess. But, like, is this supply and demand, Jess, or is this just somebody being a little greedy and trying to charge you the highest major league price for a literal AAA experience?
It's absurd and an insulting on so many levels that this is, if this is actually true, if this is actually what, like, the average ticket price is, because what this basically says to me is that you're spending a high premium just to sit close behind home plate, right? Like, the best possible tickets are very expensive, or it's such a small stadium that there's not really, like, a bad seat in the house kind of deal. So, like, even the seats all the way at the top are going to still be, like, you know, pretty expensive because every seat is kind of close. But the fact that you are going to pull your team out of Oakland and then you're going to try to reap the losses because of your inability to invest in the team, your inability to reward the fans, your inability to put a good product on the field, then you're going to punish the people who still support the team to pay more just to keep you alive so you can go to Las Vegas and fulfill that dream, when you're already getting revenue sharing, when you're already being taken care of by the league, when every dollar that the Dodgers spend over the luxury tax is taxed to go to you. To do this just is it's a disgusting level of greed that I don't even think I was prepared to even talk about. You know what I mean? It's just it just seems like a it seems so uncool, for lack of a better word, that it's almost shocking.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, dude, you can't even have playoff games here if you make it there, right? It's like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't know. It just seems like a fucking.
Yeah, I know they're trying to screw fans over into paying off their own mistakes.
Like, I guess it's supply and demand, whatever, but, like, it just feels trashy. It feels frustrating. And let's not forget, ground has still not broken on the A's stadium in Las Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah. And this is probably the deal that they had to make with the ballpark for them to do this. You know what
I mean? And don't forget that Fisher has made it a point to keep Sacramento's, the city's name, completely off of their branding. They're not the Sacramento A's at all. They're just the A's that are playing in Sacramento. So yep. It is even kind of shitty to your city. Like, they're disrespectful to even their fucking host town. And now, instead of trying to cater to a potential new fan base and, you know, hey, get the family in, it's like, you know what? Now we're going to squeeze you for all you got because fuck you. That's why.
Yep. Now, fuck them. It's absurd. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about it, but we're running out of time here, so I do want to just cover a couple of quick little things here. The Michigan player who did the little he snorted up the third baseline celebration, he did issue an apology after after getting a little juiced up after celebrating a triple, I believe. Is that what he was doing?
Yeah, was it Steven Voigt?
Mitchell Voigt. Mitchell Voigt.
Yeah, Steven.
Yeah, yeah.
The coach, former player.
Yeah,
but,
no.
So yeah, no. Look, he made a goof. He's a college kid. He issued an apology. I don't think it needs to be anything more than that. But I will say it's about the funniest damn celebration I've ever seen. And I got, dude, you got to give that kid so much credit for that, the originality. Yeah. You know he had been sitting next to some of his buddies, and they're like, dude, first guy to slide into third, you gotta fucking just take a big old rail. He's like,
yeah,
hold my beer, man. Well,
I just love I just love that there's a screenshot on John Boy of this kid after, you know, he snorts the line of coke in his celebration, right?
Hold on, he didn't snort a line of coke, but he,
I know, that's what he was mimicking.
Pantomime, right? Snorting chalk off the baseball.
No, I know, right? That's what he's correct. But in this photo that they use, there's a Christian cross is flying off of his neck, and his apology is, I would like to apologize for my actions on third base yesterday. I made an immature decision in the heat of the moment. The gesture I made does not reflect my character, the household I was raised in, or the block M that I represent in any way. I take full responsibility for what I did. I am truly sorry for all of those who have negatively impacted by doing this. So I'm guessing the president of school athletics had a little sit down with this guy.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like to me.
I'm just saying, that was fun. I liked it. I mean, I'm not saying anybody should go do some bam bam, but I thought it was funny. I, you know, he's got to apologize. But, yeah, way to get on third, dude.
I added something here because we're
ooh,
that I wanted to talk about just very briefly, because my dad sent me a text and he said that because he's like an old guy and he likes to root for old guys sort of like revamping their career. Turns out Joey Gallo is actually switching over. He's going to try to become a pitcher. And yeah, I didn't know about this until last night when my dad sent this to me. So I just thought it was worth knowing. Do you think Joey Gallo will make it into Major League Baseball as a pitcher?
Possibly. I think he was hitting like 96 or something back in the day as a pitcher. So he's got it in there. I guess he's earned the opportunity to try. And he's on the White Sox. So what the fuck do they got to lose, man? Put Gallo out there. Sell some tickets, let him close out some games. Who knows?
Yeah. No, well, good for you, Joey Gallo. I'll be rooting for you. And the last thing that we're going to say here is
the
I just
last absurdity.
I want to give a shout out to one man. Just a little shout out to
that's our guy. Shouts out to the man.
Jackie Robinson. We're not going to get super political here, but his something fucking stupid happened with the Defense Department, erased a story of him sort of deleting his history of military service to the country, because I guess part of like U.S. Trump's DEI initiative, they're scrubbing all traces of DEI and diversity on government websites, and it ended up being Jackie Robinson's military history, which kind of seems like a pretty big oversight to lump him into all of that shit. So, yeah, you know, let's honor our heroes here, guys.
Yeah. After a pretty vocal outcry from the public, the DOD did reverse that. And the article did discuss his World War II service and also discussed an arrest of Jackie, back in July 6, I believe, 1944, Jackie was told to get into the back of the bus, which he refused. Yeah. The bus driver then called military police, and he was arrested and court-martialed. That court-martial would be overturned, But this was all before Jackie broke the color barrier, before he was anybody. So, you know, just a reminder, the guy was on the right side of history, fighting for his own, you know, his own worth, right, as a human being before before he was a famous ball player. And, you know, Jess, it's one of those things, we're not getting political at all, but, yeah, you can't erase history. Jackie is the, you know, in so many ways, the savior of modern baseball, right? He was the man that broke the color barrier and righted this very public injustice, right? And I don't want to say righted, but was the first step towards what we see now, you know, a very diverse league, playing games in Asia, South America, you know, Latin America, I should say specifically, going and playing games in Europe. It's global. It's bigger than ever, and it's going to continue to do that, and it's going to continue to showcase diversity, whether that's in fashion or not. It's a core aspect of the game, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter your skin color. You're all pulling for the same goal at the end of the day, right? You know, you want to win. You want to pull for that name on the front of your jersey, and yeah, dude, Jackie's a hero in my book, along with all the other, you know, champions of integration. And
and he's also super pro-American too. Very pro-American guy.
Super pro-American.
And yeah, we can't just because we don't like what's going on now doesn't mean we can erase what happened back then. And I think that's why sports are important. That's why we're, you know, moments in history are important. We can't erase that shit just because you don't like something that's happening right now.
Totally.
You know, so
couldn't agree more, brother.
Yep.
But
well, you fucking killed it there, brother. I have nothing more to add on top of what you said. So, like,
well, Jesse, to that I will just say arigato gozaimasu, which is just a super respectful way to say thank you so much in Japanese.
I hope that was the actual translation.
The 2025 Tokyo game series party. But yeah, we are a few days away from the start of the regular season for the rest of the league.
Domestic opening day.
There you go. And we hope it's filled with as much excitement and pageantry as this one.
Ring ceremony is game two, by the way. For all you Dodger fans out there, it's not game one. Ring ceremony is game two. So if you're buying your tickets, they're actually cheaper for game two. So
whoa, go get them. We might need to get out there, Jess.
Yeah.
But everybody, thank you for joining us. This has been Deferred Collusion. With me, as always, my co-partner in crime, my host with the most, Jesse, the machine, Gun. But his last name's Ro. I'm getting
Tommy John, guys, by the way.
Dude, kids blew out his arm playing hockey, dude.
I did.
Were you shrooming like Michael Blue Blay at the fucking All-Star game, the NHL?
No, I think I'm just aging faster than I would have hoped. I went and played hockey. Then the next day I went and played golf, and then my elbow just blew out, and now I'm fucking like, do I have to go get the Shohei bionic arm surgery? That's where I'm at.
I think you should get Shohei'd. But everybody, please drop us a comment, like, subscribe if you're into it, share it with somebody if you're if you think they'd like it. But it helps us out so much. And again, sincerely, thank you guys for joining us. This has been Deferred Collusion, and Jess, we're out, dude.
Peace.